Well, hey, everybody, welcome to another episode of Master the NEC, where we talk about the National Electrical Code and all things electrically related. My name is Paul Abernathy, your host, as always, and I want to thank you for taking the time out of your day to come listen to our podcast. Again, you can listen to our podcast on all your favorite podcast listening platforms, Spreaker, Spotify, Deezer, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio as well. But you also can listen from our website. So visit masterthenec.com, and you will actually a link on there for podcasts. You can listen directly from there. You can also listen to all of our podcasts over on our YouTube channel, because we share all of our podcasts over on the YouTube channel. Now, I would say that the majority of our following is our podcast, although we do quite a few videos educationally, and we share them on our YouTube channel. Most of our following and listeners come from our podcast, so that is probably why, if you ever ask or ever wondered why we do way more podcasts than I do videos, it's because the video is kind of saturated. So I do an awful lot of podcasting, one, because it's easier for me to do that on the fly, and there's so many things that I can talk about that you really can't get into in a video because it drags out the time. So again, that's why I use a podcast platform. So if you haven't listened to our podcast before, load it on your phone. You can listen from the app, the YouTube app on your phone. But there's so many other platforms. I actually listen to podcasts on, Spotify. That's my preferred listening platform. And if you're looking for us on that, just look for Master the NEC and you'll find us on all of those platforms. And we appreciate the thumbs up and the likes and the shares and everything on those platforms. It really does help us. All right, today we're going to talk a little bit about teaching styles. And because I've had a lot of people ask, they have different instructors through their career, or whether they are an instructor or an educator, and they ask me questions all the time. So this podcast is based on some emails that I've gotten recently from other educators and things like that. And everybody noticed that over on my Master the NEC app, which you can download, thanks to Wix, from our website, masterthenec.com, all one word, or all one phrase, if you will. And you can download the app, which gives you quick access to my blog, as well as the chat forum, if you want to ask questions or post anything in our forum. It's so much easier to do from the app. I think we have currently over 500 plus people that are using the app. I'd love to see a lot more than that. But again, many people don't know about it. So check out the app. That way you get direct access to us and anything from Master the NEC directly from the app on your phone. It just makes it so much easier. And you can read all my blogs that I put out. And lately I've been putting out quite a few blogs on leadership, training, mentorship, management, and things like that, as well as some on speaking and how to address speaking situations and things like that. So check that out if you haven't seen our blogs. So over on our website, there's a blog button in the top right, or go to the app and download it, and you'll see right away, there's a link to our blog, and you can read all those blogs. And feel free to share them, print them, whatever you like. All right, so talk about teaching styles. Sometimes I get, every now and then, I get an email from somebody, and usually they've been doing this for a while in themselves. And of course, again, there's no worse person to have critique you than somebody that already teaches, because they think they know it all. So they'll post some kind of comment or whatnot, and usually I right-click delete. And, you know, again, I do want to learn from people, and I do take criticism. However, you can pretty much tell when somebody has a mission, and so I don't pay attention to that, or I don't buy into that negativeness part of it, so I just get rid of it. But there is legitimate types of teaching styles, and I use one of the styles, and so I'm going to talk about that today. And it's not just for those that are thinking about becoming an educator. I mean, you can't pull a wire all your life, right? So you might want to become an educator. Maybe you're at that level of knowledge that you want to share with other people. I'm a believer, again, that master electricians should always be sharing knowledge. Journeymen should be sharing it to apprentices. Everybody has to share this knowledge of this trade. It's the best trade in the world. But there's different ways to do it. So people learn different ways. Okay, some people can read something and they just understand it, right? They read it, good to go. And that's really good skill to have if you're using the National Electrical Code, because you've got to read it and then you put it into action, right? And being able to interpret it or understand what it is, you know, it's a kind of a gift. And then some people don't have it that way. Some people will literally have to put their hands on it, right? So they have to physically do something to get it. And there's other people that can hear it. Hear somebody explain something, whether they're at a seminar, a lecture, or something, and they can connect audibly with the mission, and they get it. And, of course, the most people that connect audibly or even, you know, visually without is because they also at some point are doing the hands-on. So they're working in the day as an apprentice or a helper or a journeyman or a master. They're doing it, and when they hear something or they see something, they make a connection, right? And so that helps solidify that training process. Now, one of the things that instructors have to think about as they develop their teaching style is that, again, everybody learns a different way. So in order to be able to connect with the student, you have to understand that you have to identify your teaching style, and then you got to determine, how am I going to tickle these senses in the best way I can? If I can't give them a hands-on, do I give them a visual, and do I give them an audible, and how do I tie these together so that I can hammer this home? Well, there's a certain way to do it in one of my teaching styles, which, again, sometimes I get criticized for, and that's okay. Again, criticism's fine. Again, when it turns nasty or it comes from another educator, then that's not a criticism. That's just their opinion. And I use a style called repetition. And some people will say, Paul, for example, you're very redundant. You say things over and over again in one of your lessons, or that you repeat stuff over and over again during a lesson. And the answer is absolutely 100% correct. You have identified my teaching style. My teaching style using repetition is to take key topics, key points that I do as repetition, and say them over and over through the course of a lesson in order to subliminally put it into your mind so that when you walk away from that lesson, certain key topics stick. Okay. And that is the method of repetition. So that's just a teaching style. And I developed this teaching style many years ago when I, probably more than 30 years ago, when I was going through my training program, which it was 5 days a week, all day for 2 full years, covering everything from the book sense to the hands-on to everything, from residential, commercial, industrial, motor control, all of those type of things. I was blessed to be in a program that was 2 full years, not just a couple nights a week type of an apprenticeship program, which are great, mind you, they are great. But I was just in a situation where I could get this 5 days a week type training. And I was so blessed to have an instructor. And that instructor had a unique gift of using the technique repetition in a atmosphere of visual and audible learning. But of course, it was 5 days a week. So we had the hands-on. So we put it all together. So what I started thinking about as I started my teaching career way back in the late 80s is I said, look, I'm not always going to be able to give a hands-on. I'm going to be teaching in front of an audience. I'm going to be teaching in a classroom. And sometimes I don't have the ability to do a hands-on. But if I do a visual and I back it up with an audible, that if I use repetition at key points, then the student can walk away with certain things that are locked into their mind. Why? Because one of the problems with students, and again, we all can have this problem because, again, our attention span is so short in today's world, even back in the late 80s, it wasn't really much different, is that it's called comprehension. And so it's not just reading comprehension, it's audible comprehension. So if somebody reads something and it's a paragraph, especially if it's something as technical as, let's say, the National Electrical Code, they read it, and then once they get to the end of the sentence or the paragraph, then they actually lost focus on what the intent was of the actual lesson or what it was in the code language. And so that's a comprehension issue. And the only way that you can combat a comprehension issue is through repetition and having somebody go over it. So you've asked yourself, how can I validate that? Well, it's pretty easy. If you find yourself reading something and if you're done, you have to go back and read it again. And by chance, you have to go back and read it again, then you have a reading comprehension problem. Same thing for audible. If I explain something to you audibly and you hear it and you can't connect it with anything, like you're not putting tools in your hands and you're working on it as somebody, as you hear it, then you have an audible comprehension problem. And that is when you have to say to somebody, can you repeat that? Or can you say that again? Or what was that part right there? Then there's something about it that you did not connect with. Now, it could obviously be the instructor who's not conveying the message directly on point, or it could be that you're just not receiving it. Now, the reason I say this is because it's quite interesting. As I ventured into this program that we have at Electrical Code Academy, the Fast Tracks, which is a program that I created over 2 years ago now, and it uses a very popular document that I approve of, and I approve of the author. Obviously, I have tons of that I could choose from, and I obviously could write my own material. I have co-authored books for the same publisher, but I like the ability to separate myself from the document when it comes to exam prep so that I can be very objective in my comments and how I address something so that I can point to the author rather than say this is Paul's way. And so I use that for a reason. And again, you know, by doing that, it allows me to separate myself from it and give total, contrast to whatever that's being discussed from the student towards me. But the point being is, in the process, some people will read something, some people will hear something, and they can't put two and two together. And as I said, going through the Fast Tracks program for the last 2 years, and what we do is, whether you know this or not, I don't know if you're not a Fast Track student or you're just somebody who's curious at it, we actually track the algorithm. I actually look at the students and I look at the analytics and I look at the grading system and we record everything in the analytics so that I can see which units, for example, the percentage of student comprehension goes down. And how do we know this? Because we have what's called competency reviews. Now, the student thinks that these competency reviews are simply just a question and answer period at the end of a long studied unit. And it actually is that, but it's also more. And for me, it's to garner analytics to understand if a student comprehended the information that was in the unit, because all of the competency reviews that come at the end of a unit within the Fast Tracks program are based on what they learned during that unit. So when the grades are low and I go back and look at the analytics for that unit, I can tell which students have reading comprehension issues or they were distracted, which again leads to reading comprehension issues. And that's why we instituted what's called ballistic training. Now, ballistic training is just an approach that we've had for many years in my teaching, whereas you tickle all the senses. So the fact that the program has an ability to have it play audibly to you while you read along at the same time has a tendency to increase your ability to comprehend the information. And that's the important aspect of it, because again, it's pointless to go through a program if you can't comprehend the material. So what we do is we track all those analytics. We can tell when somebody have used the audible feature, all these type of things in order to be able to tell what percentage of our students are learning and which ones are struggling. So one of the other aspects of this is if you have a student who goes and takes an exam and they do very poorly on the exam, and then they come back and they say, well, I don't understand. I went through a program. What they don't realize is that I've already studied the analytics, and if their scores are in the 60s and low 70s and whatnot, and we've overly tell them during our unit reviews that you need to get those scores above 85%, then if you get over 60%, we're going to give you the answers, but we're going to see whether or not you go back and review the material. Now, we can see all that. We see every login of a student. So when a student says, well, I didn't get anything out of it for this unit or whatnot, we can tell whether or not they dedicated their time to that unit. So you're only going to get out of something what you put into it. And so an instructor needs to understand that teaching style in order to do that. So when I'm teaching live or teaching seminars or our weekly exam preps that we have on Zoom now, which is an exclusive for our Fast Tracks program. I don't think anybody else is doing that one-on-one time with me each week. If you're interested in that, check out our website. This is an approach for me to be redundant because that's my teaching style. Because by the time we end a 2-hour session, I'm going to hammer home the topic at hand into your head multiple times. And so that you walk away understanding what the key target points are. So that is the teaching style. And again, it's called repetition. Some people do not like that because they say you're repeating something over and over and over again, but they don't understand the style. And there's a reason I do it. After 35,000 students in over 30 years, I have learned that the majority of our students for retention purposes, not all of them, but the majority of them for retention purposes, really learn better with redundancy approach. Okay. And it does take longer to record something to have redundancy. I get it. It's multiple times and some students might not like it, but it is what it is. And we're not changing that style. That is my style, redundancy technique. The next question that typically comes up, Paul, that I get asked by inspiring educators or people that want to do public speaking or things like that is the use of PowerPoints or some type of media presentation. I tell people all the time that I'm a big believer in PowerPoints, whether that is old school or not, only because I want to keep it simple, stupid. And the PowerPoint approach allows me to have it not lead the discussion, but provides me with talking points to allow me to elaborate. So when I do a presentation on PowerPoint, whether it's in a classroom or a seminar or something like that, I'm drawing the attention of the student to the board to look at the PowerPoint presentation, keeping the verbiage as light as possible, but allow it to have a discussion. And then, of course, if I'm in a live environment, I start walking towards the students and with my hands out. If you've ever been to one of my classes, you see this technique. And that takes their attention away from the board or away from the screen and in focusing on me, because then it's my job to convey the message and tickle those senses. And that's where repetition kicks in. And I make sure that I convey the message. But again, it's got to be clear and direct in addressing the topic. And that's kind of how I use a PowerPoint presentation. People ask, there's two different ways to use a PowerPoint. You can be a leading, PowerPoints can lead and you follow. Or PowerPoints can be in the background and you lead and they're just there to give subtle points. That's the way I like to do it because, again, the PowerPoint should not be dominant. But there are other educators that the PowerPoint is dominant and they just kind of follow up. Where would that change in my style rather than me being dominant and the PowerPoint subliminal in the back? Would be when I'm doing an NEC code change, for example. So if I'm doing a National Electrical Code Change seminar and I'm using a very well thought out, well planned, highly graphic latent presentation that kind of tickles all those senses visually and allows me to couple that with an audible presentation in order to convey that message of what the picture says, then that's a time when I might let the PowerPoint lead. There are some better than other PowerPoint presentations. For example, when I do live classroom training, IAEI, International Association of Electrical Inspectors, has a really great PowerPoint presentation, costs about $1,000 for it. Why recreate the wheel? When you buy it, you get permission to use it in your presentations. And it's done so well that that's an example of a PowerPoint presentation where I let that lead and I follow. But I do it in an approach where once you read the screen, I pause and I tell the room, I said, okay, let's look at the information on the screen for a second. Let's take this in. And then after I feel there's a pause and people are looking at it. And again, I'm looking at the crowd. I'm judging their eyes. I'm seeing where they're looking. Then I'll take a couple steps forward and I will reach out my hands to them in a gesture to redirect them from the screen to me. Again, doesn't work so well on the internet, but again, I don't use the IEI presentation on the internet. I just use it for classrooms. And redirecting them now to you allows me to make a connection with the student to where I can convey the message that's on the screen, but in my own way. And so that's how I typically use it if the PowerPoint leads. Now, if the PowerPoint follows subliminally in the background, these are just talking points, and I might do the addressing up front to the students, and then I might turn a little bit catty to the actual presentation screen, and I might point and say, notice bullet point number one. This is, you know, and then it instantly, they look at it, and it redirects it to me. So there's a difference between a leading PowerPoint and a following PowerPoint or a subliminal PowerPoint. And I fall more towards subliminal, but there is times when it can be leading. For example, like a exam prep type, a code change. That's more where it would be more of a leading. The next question that typically comes to me as an educator is how you handle disruptive students in your training session. Now, this would be more towards live classroom interaction, one-on-one, where you have a classroom full of people. There's always that one in the crowd type of scenario who wants to feel like they have to pound their chest to make everybody in the room, including you, know that they know their stuff. And that's fine. That's perfectly fine. Not sure why they would come to a training class if that's their goal. But anyway, they do. And there's a couple ways that you can handle the disruptive students. And there's different ways you can address them and look straight at them. And either one, you can answer their question. Or two, if it's very, very combative, you can say, look, I understand your concerns. We don't want to take everybody's time here because they're here to learn something. And you clearly focused on a certain aspect of this lesson. I would love to get with you afterwards and we can go into in-depth conversation on it and we can see if we can help each other out. Okay. Cause maybe you have something to teach me and then you can get directly back into your lesson. There's other times when that does not work. And so one of the techniques I do is that if there's a weakness in their argument, I will, and some people don't like this approach and that's fine. Everybody has their own type of approach. But one of my ways, if there's a weakness in their presentation, then I will embarrass them in order to them to gain silence, although sometimes that could backfire on you because they get more resolute. But again, everybody has their own style. I think if I had to tell a new instructor a way to handle a disruptive student, if it's a student that's creating controversy or causing disruption in there, or heckler, if you should say, then I would say, look, these people paid or these people, you know, came here because they want to learn something. I am very interested in what you have to say. I would love to have a conversation with you offline and we could talk about all these things that you appear to disagree with. And I understand, but I've got to move forward because, again, these individuals here came to learn something. And I don't want to sidetrack us, but it doesn't mean your information is not important or your concerns are not important. Let's just do it offline. And then make time for yourself after the lesson so you can have a conversation. Because now this person really knows that you want to connect with them. And that's kind of what they wanted to begin with, right? They wanted that recognition. So, and there's a reason they're not on stage and you are, right? You have to always remember that as well. So, and the other thing about it is depending on the style of student, you can twist it to where it's benefit. So another approach to a disruptive student is embracing. So if they bring a valid point up, then you can embrace them and say, absolutely, great point. That's a great point for everybody here to know. And they have achieved what they desired. They wanted the attention. They had something that they wanted to get off their chest or whatnot, okay? And so, again, I can't tell you there's any one way to handle a disruptive student. You can embrace them. You can embarrass them. Again, probably not the preferred way to do. But again, it depends on the topic and what they're saying and whether or not it's truly incorrect. Like one time at a seminar, I had a student who swore that electricity, takes the path of least resistance. And in all cases, and I was like, well, and he was already kind of saying things through the, out of the blue during the seminar. And so I took an opportunity to take one of his statements as a totally grossly false statement. As no, actually, that's incorrect. And I can understand why you have all these questions today, because there's probably some gaps in your education of this topic that I want to help you with. And I'd like to help you offline. I want to help you. I'm here to help you. But you need to understand that electricity takes the path of all paths of resistance. Okay, not just the path of least resistance, okay? And then you can go into how it divides based on the resistance of or the impedance of that path, depending on your skill set or your knowledge base. And that's a misdirection or a redirection, I should say, not misdirection, redirection of somebody that might be a disruptive student in your class. My focus on this is you have to address it. You can't ignore it. So there's different styles. You can embrace it. You can embarrass it or you can simply just say, acknowledge it and say, I'd love to talk offline with you. I have a lot of stuff to talk about and I really don't want to take away the students' time that they're here. for this, because this is something that we can have as a sidebar. We might agree to disagree, but let's do this offline and maybe we both can learn something. And you'd be surprised how that diffuses it and it goes on. And then now they know they have that time. And you might even say to them, you know what? I'm sure there's might be other things that I say today that you might disagree with. Put them together, write them down, remember it. And when we get offline, we'll have that conversation and we'll both be able to learn something. How about that? Fair enough. And I also find that asking them a question at the end always is a benefit. Whereas I say, we'll discuss this later. Fair enough? You agree? Sounds like a fair plan? Things like that help to diffuse that as well. Now, lastly, a lot of people ask, how do I close a live class? Very different online, but a live class, how do you close it? How do you leave it? What are the takeaways that you always want to leave a student? Well, when I leave a class, I always want to leave with a takeaway of, I hope you learned something today. I'm always here to help you. If you're sincere about helping them, then you give your email address, you give your phone number, text message, or whatever, if you're sincere about it, and say, look, I'm here if you need me. And if you have questions, please reach out, because that's what I'm here for. So at the end, you always want to wrap up your training session, if it's a live training session, with that approach. Why? Because during your hour or 2 hour or 3 hours or whatever your training session was, you could have said something that is offensive. You could have said something that was very taken maybe a wrong way. And or you could have had something that, and you didn't mean it to be that way, but it could have been conveyed a wrong way or somebody took it the wrong way. You know, today everybody's feelings get hurt over anything. So when you end a session, the one thing I will tell you that tendency of people to have is a short memory span. So when you end the training, you want to clear up all loose ends. So I always will say, look, I'm always here to help you. Hopefully I didn't say anything today that would offend you. That wasn't my intent. I'm just trying to help you. And all those type of ending type of approaches in order to wrap up a training session. And you'll say things like, look, I'm always here to help you. My effort here is to teach you. I don't know it all, but I've been around on this planet for teaching electrical for over 30 years. And again, you might have something to teach me, and I am certainly here and I enjoy the opportunity to teach you. If you have a slide, you would go, here's my contact information. Here's my website. You can always reach out to me. I will. And if you're going to stay after the class to answer questions one-on-one, then say it at this point. If you're ready to just bolt out of there, that's fine. But if you're really ready to answer some questions, then don't be afraid to say, you know, I'm going to hang around. I got this gentleman. If you had a disruptive student, you got this gentleman. We're going to have a conversation. We're going to learn something from each other. But if you have any questions, please, by all means, get with me after this presentation or after this training, and I'll do my best to try to answer those questions for you. And if I can't answer them on the fly for you, then let's exchange emails, and we will stay in touch, and I will get you the answers you need. That way you feel like you've left the session with something positive that you can work with. And that's how I like to leave all of my live. And again, that changes depending on the crowd, depending on how active they are, how involved they are, how many questions they've been asking during the session, all those type of things is how I like to end a live session. Now, an internet session is a little different because it's very time specific. So when you get to a certain time, I'll say something again similar to that. Say, look, I'm here to help you. If you need anything, please reach out to us. This is my website. We have a contact form on there. I'll do my best to help you. Hopefully I didn't say anything that offended anybody because it wasn't my intent. Again, I apologize. If so, I'm just here to teach you. Again, all of those are what we call closing statements to kind of close up and have everybody walk away to a point where they might have halfway through the presentation gone, what a prick, not meaning to be, just in how they interpret it. And then at the end, they walk away and they go, wow, this, you know, okay, I get it. He didn't mean it. He's just trying to help me. He's just here to help. And believe it or not, it works. Although, again, you should go out of your way not to be a prick, by the way. But again, sometimes, you know, depending on how the flow goes of a training class, it can go either way. So anyway, those are some of my things about teaching styles. Again, I'm a very repetitive teaching style, as you can hear now. I believe that you should go over key points multiple times during a presentation to hammer it home subliminally. they're going to take it with them as they leave, and those are the things they're going to remember. PowerPoints, you have a choice. You can lead it or you can follow it. Certain ones, I believe that 95% of the time I'm leading my PowerPoint, PowerPoint subliminally in the background with bullet points that I point to. But there are occasions, like with the code changes, that have a very detailed, very complex slide screen presence. Then I'm going to use those to lead it, and I'm going to walk forward, engage the audience, and I'm going to take that information, and now I'm going to elaborate on it. Disruptive students, different ways to handle it. You can embrace them. You can embarrass them. Again, don't recommend that one unless you know what you're doing, because you have to find the right time. And you have to make sure there's a weakness in their presentation that'll usually get them to be quiet. The best approach for a disruptive student is to say, look, I understand your concerns and I understand your feeling, and let's get together later and let's go over those. So again, obviously you have something that you can teach me, and I love to learn. And that's really what they wanted, right? They felt like they had something to teach. They had something they wanted to correct you on. So if you embrace it and you say, let's get together, and if you have any other questions as we go on with this presentation, just write them down or remember them and bring them to me afterwards. I'm going to give you a little one-on-one time. We're going to work together, and I'll answer all those questions. Usually that stops them from future disruption, believe it or not. It does. And if they do burst out later, you go, hey, write that down, buddy. We'll talk about it later. Me and you, one-on-one, you got my full attention. I got something I want to learn today, and I appreciate you. And that tends to be the best approach. And again, lastly, the closing of a live seminar or training session, classroom, is make sure you tie up all the loose ends from your training. If you feel like there's a hint that you could have offended, or you could have said something that's biased, or whatever your style is, whatever you're doing, this is your opportunity to close that loop and be sincere and say you're here to help. And that's the things that they'll remember. They'll remember all the bullet points that you talked about repetitiously. But at the end, they'll realize, look, you're just here to help, and convey that to them. And it'll always end well if you do that. I've had a student that was kind of upset. And this years ago, many years ago. And when I use the ending approach like that, they came to me later and say, I apologize for disrupting. It made them feel guilty. And that's okay. They, you know, again, it's not easy to get up in front of a crowd and teach, okay? Because you're always on. And any little thing that you say gets magnified by people, because they're not looking at the entire approach of the presentation. They're just looking for the piece that they disagree with. And so that becomes the focus of what they remember. And so that's what I say to people all the time. It's like a boss at work, right? You can work great for an entire year, and you're doing an end of year review, and you had one little incident where you were upset or something, and it just didn't go right, and you had to be reprimanded. But all of a sudden in your end of year review, that's what comes up. And you're like, wait a minute. I had 364 good days with you last year, but you can't seem to remember anything but the one disagreement that we had. Okay. That's what we're talking about, to be able to diffuse that and turn that negative into a positive. And in a classroom or a teaching setting, those are the approaches that we're trying to do with an in closing that embraces everybody, says you're here to help. Here's my contact, everything like that. If I said anything to offend you, I apologize. It wasn't my intent. I'm just trying to teach you. And for those that we're going to meet later, again, I'm more than happy to listen to your concerns, because I want to learn too. That's why I'm here too. This is why I do this. And believe it or not, it'll go in your favor. So anyway, that's just some of those things that people have sent me and asked me. And again, I figured I would just discuss them. If you're interested in it, great. If you're not, then I just wasted 35 minutes of your time approximately. So I would assume you had to have some type of interest in it. And if you're one of those low-life losers who want to give a thumbs down, go do that if you will, because you got nothing else better to do. There you go. That's how I handle disgruntled students. All right, folks, till next time, stay safe. God bless.